Hello, hello, and welcome in to yet another week's version of Hate the Player, Not the Game. Man, feels like it's been a year since last week's show, going to be honest. A lot of stuff going on, but of course, as always, in case you didn't know, I'm Lucas Owens. Welcome into this week's show. Got a nice show coming out for you. We got college football recaps and previews, of course. Ceiling signs with just 3 days left in MLB's regular season, going to go down all the clinch races and the things sell up for grabs, and some games that may not look like they matter but do matter. And then we'll finish things off with Survivor Math with Sticks, episode 2 of the creatively titled Survivor 41. Should be a fun time. But in case you couldn't tell, not enough sleep is going on in the Lucas Owens room lately. And that is because of the San Francisco Giants choosing to play all their games at 9 and not finish until 1 a.m. And out of some weird sense of fanmanship, I feel like I need to watch, and that's just continually a mistake. So, yeah, a lot of naps in my future. But let's get into the college football recap real quick. So, Fresno State, after all of the hype I was giving them, they barely survived UNLV. I mean, Jake Haner came through where it counts, 378 yards, 5 touchdowns. He wasn't the problem. The problem was the defense for Fresno State. I mean, the offense did have a very slow start, but the defense just did not play good in that first quarter. Just gave up way too many long drives in the first quarter. Just cannot happen in a league like the Mountain West, where that just isn't really how things go, if you understand me right. So Charles Williams for UNLV, though, he had a pretty good day. He had 102 yards and 1 touchdown on 19 carries. That's a pretty solid performance against a Fresno State defense. I was pretty excited about going into that one, and not anymore. I think that's going to really be a battle out in the Mountain West. Still think they're the best team in the Mountain West, so of course, it's BYU still independent, but I think that's more a product of the Mountain West just not being that strong this year, honestly. Don't really have a lot of faith in the Mountain West outside of Fresno State. They are still 4-1 just with that one loss to Oregon. That looks better and better every week, so I think they can make some noise, but they're going to have to not give up 30 points to a team like UNLV that is now, after that loss, 0-4. Of course, that's a product of them losing to Fresno State, but still, not a very good team. Arkansas kind of put it to Texas A&M in a surprising game, at least from my point of view. I mean, Texas A&M is a weird team, honestly. When you don't have a quarterback, this is what happens. Zach Calzada, he's fine. He's okay. But if you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to be able to score anything. That's what happened. Texas A&M's defense played like you would expect them to be. This Arkansas team is pretty fiery on offense, honestly. And they only gave up 20 points. Of course, 17 of those were during the first half, in basically the first quarter. But still, a pretty solid performance there. And KJ Jefferson, just 7-15, 212 yards. That's all Arkansas needed. But Texas A&M, you don't really have a lot going on for them on that offensive side of the ball. And I don't know why they were ranked so high, because it was plain to say that they didn't have anything there. But it is what it is. Georgia, going to briefly talk about this. Georgia gave Vanderbilt one of the all-time beatings in SEC conference play, 62-0.
and T-Town. Some people saw Vanderbilt could
turn a little bit of a leaf this year, and they're not. But still, that's an interesting one right there. Oregon. This was Oregon, Arizona. This was a surprising game because the score is 41-19, and you'd figure, oh, Arizona, it's a Pac-12 conference foe. They're going to give them a little bit of trouble. And Oregon, even though they're number three, they still beat them by 22. That's because they scored 17 in the last quarter. They were barely up against Arizona after three, 24-19. And this is the team that the Pac-12 has basically pinned all their hopes behind. It's Oregon. And that happens. You know, for better or worse, Oregon's literally the only undefeated Pac-12 team left this early in the season. Athletic, so, really saying something. And Arizona has lost to Northern Arizona. And they lost to San Diego State 38-14. And they lost to BYU 24-16, which honestly was probably their best game so far this year. They're ranked number four in the Ryan McGee bottom 10. And I'm not saying something because usually they don't really mess with those from year to year. Like, if you're consistently bad, you don't get put down there. But still, Arizona, not a good team. Oregon cannot be playing them like that if they are going to go far. I mean, there's always an element of chaos in the Pac-12, but that's a little ridiculous. A game that was especially bad to watch, though, was West Virginia-Oklahoma. Oklahoma, of course, was number four ranked team. They beat West Virginia 16-13, and Spencer Rattler went 26 for 36 at 256 yards and one touchdown. So this is the Spencer Rattler case is interesting because after how he finished last year and the hype in this season, you would have figured this would be disappointing. He did fine. He did fine. The problem was, everybody expected him because of the Oklahoma Heisman kind of run that they had, where two different quarterbacks straight got the Heisman, and then the next year Jalen Hurts transfers in and almost gets it. You expect them to be good, and he just isn't that, and that's gonna be really disappointing to some people. And you kind of understand it, but still, it's like 256 yards and one touchdown is okay. The problem is this is supposed to be Oklahoma, and this is West Virginia. And West Virginia is not exactly the best this year. So I can see the disappointment. Clemson did lose to NC State, though. That is way crazier. Of course, that was in overtime, but yeah, I mean, DJ Uiagalelei just hasn't really had it so far this year in terms of throwing the ball. Running the ball, he's fine. Throwing the ball, it's just not good right now. And the rest of the team just isn't there to make up for it. You can't make up for it that much. And I think this is just going to be a transition year, honestly, for Clemson. They just kind of need to get through this year, in my opinion. And once they get past it, they'll probably be fine. But still, not the best look for the ACC to have their by far the most hyped team lose like that in their first game of conference play? No, second game of conference play, excuse me. They still have Wake Forest and Boston College. Boston College did look pretty good in that game against Missouri. People were going against Missouri and saying Missouri was why Boston College won that game. Boston College is just playing good, honestly. They weren't a top 25 team, but that team has some potential. They're just very consistent, and for a lot of college football, that is good enough to go far. Honestly, they're consistently good, and that is good enough to be great in college football. BYU beat South Florida 35-27. This game, I think, was by far, like, if you want to take any sliver of hope in USF this year, it was this game. Because USF went down 28-6 at halftime. And they did something that I think was one of the most out there things, but something that made a lot of sense if you looked at what was going wrong for them in the first half. They slowed the game down hilariously slow. I mean, it was honestly ridiculous just how quick the second half was going because USF was running the ball the entire time for 7-minute drives. You look at their 3 touchdowns that they scored in the second half. 7 minutes and 35 seconds. 2 minutes and 37 seconds. That was a little bit of an outlier because of a big play. And then 9 minutes and 5 seconds in the fourth quarter to narrow it down to 35-27. That's just not seen these days in college football. And you look at the skill on both sides of the ball, USF should not have had a chance in this game, especially because BYU is basically the second-best team in the Pac-12, even though they aren't in the Pac-12. And USF really gave them hell in that second half, and I think that's pretty interesting to see. I think USF might just possibly be turning a corner, and that could be interesting as the American develops and changes over the next few years to see them possibly keep getting better in that conference. So I think that's pretty interesting. Okay, last game I'm going to talk about was last night, and you know why I'm talking about it. Virginia beat Miami off of a doink, and oh boy, was it a doink. Miami gets their 3rd loss of the year. Manny Diaz is a sitting duck, and man, that game should have been Virginia's all the way, and then they just had that last bad drive. And I mean, it's just remarkable the new ways Virginia, I mean, Miami finds ways to lose. And it's just a lot of fun to watch. Brings a tear to my eye, honestly. Okay, that is all I have for a college football recap. After the break, going to look into some of the most hyped games of the next week. Thank you for listening to Hate the Player, Not the Game. Hey, welcome back to Hate the Player, Not the Game. Hope you enjoyed that blur. Always a fun to try to find one of the 5 blur songs that KCLU has. But let's get right into the rest of this college football preview. Got a lot of action in week 5. Not the most exciting week, you know, kind of in that midseason, just kind of rolling along, but got some interesting games coming up. So Arkansas is playing Georgia at 11 a.m. tomorrow. Gotta love SEC scheduling for 11 a.m. for a matchup between the number 8 team in the country and the number 2 team in the country. Absolutely ridiculous, honestly. Cannot believe that they thought that was a good idea. But nonetheless, this should be a pretty interesting matchup. I'm almost wondering if JT Daniels is going to be back or if it's going to be Stetson Bennett. Not sure about that. But I think that's going to be an interesting call. I think this is easily the best team either of these teams has played and should be fun to watch. I mean, players to watch on both sides. Of course, if you're Arkansas, you got to be watching Bumper Pool, because always watching Bumper Pool just because of the fact that his name is ridiculous and, you know, he's a pretty sizable piece of that defense. And on Georgia's side, I mean, it's going to depend on quarterback. I think that's really going to be a key. You either got JT Daniels in there or you got Stetson Bennett in there. So you're going to have to be a little bit on lookout for that to see who goes in. And I think that's really going to be there. But regardless of that, I think with the way Arkansas's defense is played, you got to watch out for whoever is going to be the quarterback for Georgia. Definitely the player to watch. Michigan's playing Wisconsin. So this game could have been interesting had Wisconsin beat Notre Dame. Now, not really that much. Does Michigan actually have some goodness in them again? Are they actually as good as the record show? Probably not. But I think they are better than the Wisconsin, honestly. Wisconsin, who just got boat raced by Notre Dame, barely lost to Penn State. I think the one thing that could come into this is that it is at Camp Randall, which Jim Harbaugh has not played well at, as Michigan's head coach, excuse me. So it should be one to watch, I think, honestly. I think if there's going to be a bounce-back game in the schedule for Wisconsin, it's going to be this one. So, I mean, you just got a player to watch in this one, Cade McNamara, of course. Don't want to go towards the quarterback too much, but in such a... He hasn't really had that really big game against a really fantastic defense so far. The Rutgers defense was probably the best defense he faced, to be honest. That's just a fact because Washington's super disappointing this year. But still, should be interesting to see how he does against a not a fantastic defense, but a good enough defense, I guess is the best way to describe it. Okay, another game I am hyped about, and this is a game I've been hyped about all year. Cincinnati, number 7, Notre Dame, number 9, in South Bend. So, Notre Dame was looking a little... was struggling a bit. Cincinnati's had their struggles too. But both teams have been winning lately. Both teams come to this matchup undefeated. And I mean, if either of these teams is getting into the playoff or getting close to it, they got to win this game. So really, Cincinnati, I mean, Desmond Ridder is exactly, I'll say it time and time again, Desmond Ridder is one of the best pieces for a head coach to have a college quarterback. He's not good enough that he's just going to leave after a year or transfer out from a school that's still a group of 5 in Cincinnati, even though they're really good. But he's going to be that piece that is always good. He's not fantastic all the time, but he's always good to great, and that's just what you need. Notre Dame, on the other hand, is Jack Cohn, who honestly has been very surprising to me in how he's performed. He's done really well in the last few games. Of course, only had 158 yards against Wisconsin, but that's okay. He's been doing good enough. He's been not break quarterback in Jack Cohn for year first. But, yeah, I mean, I've been forgetting to choose the games, but I kind of honestly like Notre Dame in this one, I hate to say. But, yeah, that should be an interesting one. Going back to the games that I forgot to choose, though, I'm going to go Georgia and Michigan. I know, hottest of takes here. Ole Miss is facing Alabama. Does Lane Kiffin finally become one of the first assistants to take down Nick Saban? No. Because this Alabama's just not going to lose. They're just not going to lose these types of games. Bryce Young has stepped right into that role and honestly has become the Heisman front runner immediately in this season. I don't know how you can stop this Alabama team. I just don't see a way. I really do not see a way anybody stops that team. Oklahoma's facing Kansas State. That could be interesting. Oh, I'm picking Alabama, so going to tell. Oklahoma playing Kansas State, that should be interesting. Spencer Rattler, does he finally get something going? I don't think so. Kansas State has a good defense, but still take Oklahoma. Oregon's playing Stanford in Palo Alto. This is the last game I'm going to talk about here. I know, very short preview section, but this is going to be an interesting game just because Tanner McKee, he might not have necessarily had the best week last week against UCLA. He still did okay, and I think he's just starting to figure out that potential and finally kind of live up to it. On the other side, Oregon looked a little shaky against Arizona, and you know Stanford's going to be a lot harder of a matchup for them. Anthony Brown, I mean, I've just been so impressed by him this year. He has been the quarterback that Oregon needs and honestly been probably the best quarterback in Pac-12 at this point, if it's not McKee. But still, should be a fun one in Palo Alto. If this was later in the day, I would give the edge to Stanford. I would pick Stanford as an upset pick. But this game is at 12:30 Pacific time. That is too early for Pac-12 lunacy to go on. I'm going to have to go with Oregon there. Hate to say it. All right. That is it for college football preview. However, after the break, going to be going through the last week of MLB baseball, last regular season week, I should say. We still got the playoffs to go on. And math with six, Survivor 41, and a special treat of stuff nobody else cares about. Thank you for listening to Hate the Player, Not the Game.
KCOU 88.1 FM, Columbia, Missouri.
Welcome back to Hate the Player, Not the Game. Let's hit into ceiling signs while I still have a little bit of caffeine in me. So, it's been a crazy fun week in baseball. A lot of insane stuff going on. But let's get right down into who's clinched, what's still up for grab, and what's interesting. So let's start with the last team to clinch. The Atlanta Braves last night clinched against the Philadelphia Phillies. So the National League East is decided. Atlanta will be the 3 seed. Going on to the Central in the NL, Milwaukee will be the 2 seed. And as has been the case since last week, St. Louis is at the helm of the second wild card spot. Okay, moving on to the AL East, where all three divisions now are secured. Tampa Bay is for sure the number 1 seed. It could be a little bit of a home field advantage going on between the White Sox and the Astros, though. Doesn't particularly matter that much in a division series, to be honest, with the way they're scheduled now. All likelihood, series likely is going 4 games. Both teams will get the same amount of home games. See what happens there. But now let's move on to the interesting part. 3 games left. 3 spots or 4 spots left to be decided. So let's go to the AL wildcard real quick, because this has been phenomenally crazy for a bit now. So you look at the teams that are out of it now, that have dropped out of it now. Only one team in the last week has dropped out of it, and that is the Oakland A's. Pretty disappointing, but they've just not played well lately. Especially against a team that has come into the wild card 2 spot, the Seattle Mariners, who are 89-70. The Boston Red Sox are 89-70, and also in that slot. So if the season ended today, they would play a tiebreaker game. The Yankees, though, are just 2 games up of them with 1 last series to go. You might be saying, oh, that series is against the Rays. The Rays are going to play them good. Not going to happen. Not going to happen at all. The Rays are going to rest. The Rays are not going to play those games like the Yankees are going to play those games. Now, does that mean the Rays are going to willingly lose? No. But it's just not going to be the same tenacity that's always there. Probably going to go with a heavy bullpen game for the last game. Got to give your guys, if you can give your guys more rest, you got to give them more rest. So I think the Yankees are in. Boston is going to be playing at the Nationals. That's a series you think, oh, the Nationals are pushovers. They suck. Boston just lost 2 of 3 to everybody's favorite team, the Baltimore Orioles. The Baltimore Orioles, who, by winning those 2 games, are now 2 games up on the Diamondbacks and likely not going to get the first pick. The Baltimore Orioles, who have 107 losses. That is bad. You don't deserve to make the playoffs if you lose to the Baltimore Orioles like that. And they didn't lose. The 2 games they lost weren't exactly close games either. They got blown out by the Orioles 2 times this week. The Orioles have some good players on their team. They're still a 107-loss team, though. So, what are you going to do? The Blue Jays are just 1 game out, though. The Blue Jays, They actually have an interesting test. Do you know how I was just saying you can't lose to the Baltimore Orioles? Know who the Blue Jays play? The Baltimore Orioles. So that should be an interesting one. The Seattle Mariners, though, I think this is shaping up well in their favor. They're getting the Angels. I think out of all of these teams, I think the Yankees are in a better situation. Out of the three competing for that wild card two spot, I think Seattle has it best right now. Seattle, you got your pitching Gonzalez against Suarez tonight, then Diaz tomorrow, and then the Angels don't even have a pitcher scheduled yet for Sunday. It was going to theoretically be Ohtani. It's not going to be. And they got Anderson in that game, and Anderson has been probably the best starter for Seattle ever since they acquired him. So I think things are coming up, Seattle. If you don't get why everybody loves Seattle, you need to watch the History of Seattle Mariners documentary from Secret Base. Don't like to just shout out random things too often on this show, but man, that documentary is crazy to watch. Surely proves why the Seattle Mariners are the protagonists of baseball. But however, there's one more series going on. One more race going on, and one more series to do it. The NL West between the Los Angeles Dodgers and the San Francisco Giants. So, maybe this race is crazy. So, the Giants have 105 wins and 54 losses, and they haven't clinched yet. The Dodgers have 103 wins and 56 losses, and they're currently not in control of their own division. This is shaping up to be the best 1-2 punch of teams. I mean, the Mariners' A's record for most wins by top two teams in the division, even when considering that the AL West at that time only had four teams, that 2001 record's not going to be broken ever. But this best 1-2 punch, in my opinion, both of these teams are very good. And, it's going to be a shame that one of them's going to go to a wild card. But you got to look at these last series. Because the Dodgers are facing a certain situation kind of similar to how the Yankees are facing. They're playing the Brewers. Why the Dodgers are playing a team out of their division to finish up the season? I don't know, but they are. So the Dodgers are facing the Brewers. The Brewers, I mean, they're a great team. They're easily the third best team in the NL this year. Their pitching probably has, they're going to back their way into one win, probably just because of their pitching, I think. I mean, they're not going to push everything to the window, though. They're not going to push themselves. And, I mean, the Giants are playing the Padres, who are three games below 500. They are likely not going to get 500. They're 1-9 in their last 10. Funny enough, that one win against the San Francisco Giants. But the Giants just have to win two games and they secure the division. And I think they can easily do that. So, should be a fun one. But if you have to watch any series this week, watch Seattle. Just because this is probably the most meaningful games to come to the Mariners since 2001. And honestly, it's just beautiful to watch. This Seattle team has been through so much. The franchise has been through so much. And what this team is doing, this team is ahead of schedule. This isn't just a random team put together. This is going to be their one time to shine. This team was projected to be really good, in the next few years. And they're ahead of schedule. They have a chance to make the playoffs now. And I think that's going to be interesting. It's not interesting. It's the fact that that's because the A's suck. But, yeah, the A's window kind of has been closing up. See what they do in this offseason, but the A's have a tough road ahead. Math with six. Surviving Survivor 41. Not much to say about this week's episode. Kind of a run-of-the-mill episode. Honestly, could be compared to this week's college football slate. Yeah, I guess if there's anything I have to say, Xander did not... I get wanting to take that risk because you probably see you're not going to be in the best situation, so you feel like you need to take it. So I understand taking it, but it's not the best move to take. Basically, for the uninformed, he found an immunity idol that said, "Beware, this idol comes with huge risk. Do not, if you open it, you have to do what it says." And he has to wait for the idols to be found on the other beaches and for the people to basically say a hidden phrase before he can vote again and use the idol. And there's five people in his tribe. That's just bad. And you go to the immunity challenge, his tribe, the Yasei tribe, performed terribly on the back of Tiffany. Tiffany, I don't know what was happening there, but she did not, she just did not really perform, is the easiest way to say it. And you see that, and then all of the, there's a girls alliance in the tribe, and the three girls decide to vote out David, who performed pretty well. And they're hoping for a merge, I guess, or a swap, and there's just not going to be a tribe swap this early in the game, I don't think, at least. If there is, I'll be really surprised, but I think they're putting all of their chips into something that's not going to happen, which is kind of foolish, in my opinion. However, I did tease that I would have something to talk about nobody care about that wasn't Survivor for once. So, I don't know how in tune anybody is with the theme park Twitter. I used to cover theme parks out in California. I used to run a website about it, so I am still a little bit in tune with it, even though I have not been able to go to a theme park in like 3 years, it feels like. But there's something very interesting happening this week, and it is Walt Disney World's 50th anniversary, which is funny, but the millennial Disney adults are taking over. And honestly, the concept of a Disney adult is kind of interesting to me, because what I find, there's two groups of thought around Disney adults. There's one that's like, it's all childish, it's stupid. And then there's the thought I'm a part of, which is, as long as they're being calm about it, they're not causing any harm. Honestly, live your life. Live your life. And there's some people that do that. And then there's some people that take it too far. There's fighting in stores. They're sprinting. They're, you know, kind of just creating a weirdly aggressive atmosphere at a kids' park, which is just kind of ridiculous to me. But that is all I have for a very stupid segment for the end of a very stupid show. Thank you for listening to this week's Hate the Player, Not the Game. Make sure to tune in next week for even more stupidity. Maybe I'll talk about one of my other very weird hobbies. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your week.
Say